Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Another great show on tap this week, including previews of this weekend's top 20 matchups and an interview with one of our favorites, Georgetown head coach, Kevin Warren. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dix, great to have you back on the pod this week. Lots to talk about. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, thanks. It's good to be back. Thank you to Matt Kinnear for filling in last week when I couldn't make it. Definitely got chirped a little bit on social media as to where I was. And I guess you guys did the give and go. Well, I listened to the show, of course, and you guys did the give and go on top five grunge bands.
Yeah, we were able to have an educated discussion about music with someone with some good taste. So,
you know, if I had the energy or the viv and vigor, I'd fight you on that. You know, making fun of me for liking Hall & Oates when you and your wife were with me and my wife in September at Hall & Oates. So how dare you? I got to give a notice to Rob Kalish. Rob is in your family, right? I mean, he's...
Yeah, that's wow. Yeah, Rob's like my distant relative of my wife, on my wife's side.
Yeah, yeah. So Rob is... I've known Rob for years. I coached his son, Sam, who plays soccer and lacrosse at Babson.
Great
doing
athlete.
A nice, oh, terrific athlete. And then his older boy, Noah, graduated from the University of Michigan, was an outstanding high school wrestler. But anyway, Rob's one of our dedicated listeners. And he will text me after listening to the show and stuff like that. And then he asked me on Twitter. I didn't respond to it because he goes, I'm interested to hear Dixon's top five grunge bands. And I'm like, I said it in the interview with Kevin Warren. I'm like, there's only five anyway, right? I mean, there's a very limited sample of, unless you want to go down the road of the, as I'm looking at your Blind Melon poster right behind you, you know, Blind Melon, Ugly Kid Joe. Who were some of the other like knockoff grunge bands that were just The Offspring? I thought The Offspring was terrible.
Yeah, anyway, that's why they're not in my top five. There were a lot more. I think there's only maybe 10 that are, in my opinion, significant or really good. But there are dozens of them, as Kevin says in the interview.
Well, it's like any other musical genre. Once it gets popular, you know, guys go from, it was like, that's the story of Dr. Dre. Right. Dr. Dre was like a DJ kind of funk disco. There's pictures of him in like a sequin outfit and things of that nature. And then when hip hop rap got popular, he kind of transitioned and reinvented himself. Look, I'm just going off of history.
Music was evolving and true. Dr. Dre, you know, evolved with it.
The level of talent that he possesses and his just brilliance.
You make him sound like Don Cheadle's character in Boogie Nights, where he just hops from
that?
Like
the country music
to trend to
yeah,
trend.
Yeah. But no, that does happen in music. A lot of these grunge bands were, I guess, like metal bands.
And then it's transition. A mix of like punk rock and metal. And it was a certain sound that sort of evolved out of the Pacific Northwest and Seattle in the late 80s.
Right. You remember Warren, the band Warren?
Sure.
Really good hair. I mean, back when we were in high school, it was the hair bands that were super popular. You know, Poison, Warren. I would not throw Def Leppard in a hair band because I think they're excellent. You know, I don't think they fit. But when I watched the behind the music of Warren years ago, Janie Lane, their lead singer, who's now deceased, he goes, you know, we knew we made it big. We went into the record label and they had a huge Warrant poster behind the front desk. And then he said a year later, he goes, I knew we were done when we walked in and the huge poster was of Alice in Chains. He goes, I knew we were done. Yeah. So that's what I mean by these bands like transition from one genre and they try to make themselves look more popular with what is hot. Maybe that doesn't hold water with you. I don't know.
Well,
see, this was a conversation we could have had last week. This is me being ignorant, in your opinion. Sure. And, you know, you can't have an intelligent music conversation with me because I think Bruce Springsteen is a hoax.
He's a national treasure.
Anyway.
So that's the thing. Grunge evolved out of this metal band, hair band thing where the people were like in Pacific Northwest, Seattle especially, said, these guys are kind of posers.
Of course.
And we're going to make something that's much more authentic. And they did. And that's why that music means so much to other people in our generation.
Yeah, right. And no, I like grunge, don't get me wrong. But after a while, you know, when your Nirvanas and Pearl Jams hit it big, you got the Ugly Kid Joes and the other lame bands that were trying to copy and replicate that success.
But you don't have to listen to them.
No, of course not. But hey, listen, remember back then we didn't have Sirius or XM so we were stuck with whatever came on the radio.
True.
But then I was transitioning anyway to more of the, I know we've talked about the video jukebox, it was just hip hop and rap all day long. Cleanup Man by Willie D, the Cleanup Man. Willie D used to be in Ghetto Boys. Shout out to my buddy, Steve McCardle, my roommate from high school. I think we requested Cleanup Man like a dozen consecutive times on video jukebox one night.
All right, let's get to some lacrosse stuff. Hey, I went to my first college lacrosse game in a couple of years last weekend. I went down to see the Terps play Princeton, and there was no lasagna. My sister didn't bring lasagna, but she did bring a personalized goodie bags for my kids. Now, my daughter, she flaked out at the last minute. She had a basketball game, and we were supposed to leave right after the game to drive down to College Park for the game, and she, after her game, was like, I don't feel like going. But Bennett was all about it. And his eyes lit up. Boy, first of all, this kid is going to be a Lax Pro. He had a little stick in the back of the car. I made sure that I put it like under his feet. He saw that as we got in the car, and then he wouldn't let it go the whole time. We went to the concession stand in the bathroom. He took his stick with him. He had a great time, and he was way into the game. But my sister gave him a survival bag. So it had candy and cookies. It had like one of those squeezy ball, these fidget things that kids are all into now.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of subs that she had brought from the tailgate that she wrapped up into little sandwich, like quite sizable pieces that he could eat. Skittles. It had hand warmers.
Really cool things you squeeze.
Yeah, sure. Squeezable hand warmers. She's the best.
That's neat.
Sister is the absolute best. And Hannah didn't get one. And my sister, why I love my sister so much is she didn't even bring out Hannah's bag. I know she had it with her, but she decided not even to pull it out of her big bag to show it off, because if you don't come, you don't get it, right?
That's right. Yeah. Half the battle is showing up.
Yes. Good game. The Terps are good. Terps are really good. But I've seen Princeton play three times, and Matt Kinnear and I was at the game as well, and we were talking throughout the game. They were ranked number 20 going into the game. They lost, but Matt moved them up in his polls. I think Princeton's a legit top 20 team, and I expect some good things from them this season. Mark, there was some great midweek action, lots of games actually on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. There's a few games I want to highlight, just get your opinion on. Starting on Tuesday, big game to me was Duke High Point. Duke, an 18-14 winner over the Panthers.
Really entertaining game. Was able to catch that. High Point just wouldn't go away. And I know when we talk about High Point, we talk a lot about Asher Nolting, and rightly so. But Brendan Amaya is having a great season, and Jack Sawyer is a new weapon that John Torpy and the Panthers offense has. He had 4 goals, I believe, in that game. Duke is going to win a lot of high scoring games. They already have so far this year. That offense is really, really potent. I have some question marks on them defensively, but Jake Naso at the faceoff dot is terrific. And I like the fact that this game was at High Point. You know, I feel like a lot of these SoCon teams have to travel to play ACC teams, and it was good to see an ACC team go on the road to a SoCon opponent. So, you know, hats off to Duke for the win, but a really good effort from the Panthers.
On Wednesday, there were two games that stood out to me. The first one was Army with a significant win over Syracuse Orange in the Dome, and that was a 17-13 final.
And a game I haven't been able to check out because I was at the Loyola Towson game. Credit to Army, down 13-12 going into the fourth quarter, and they scored all 5 goals of that last stanza to win going away against the Orange 17-13. Brendan Nechtern was terrific. I think he had another 3 or 4 goal performance. Bobby Abshire is a guy who's emerged offensively for them. He had a handful of goals. So that's a nice win for Army as they continue to rebound from that loss to Rutgers 13-10 a little while ago. You know, in Syracuse, I think, is proven to be who we thought they would be. And Gary Gate said that they're a good group, but they're not going to be flashy. They're not particularly off the charts skilled. And a lot of people had their feathers ruffled when this team was ranked 15th, I think, preseason. They came into this week ranked 14th. And I think this is where Syracuse fits. I think they fit in that 14 through 17 slot. But that it's a team that will, you know, they're 1-3 right now, and they'll show improvement. I think they've got to clean some things up defensively. But a nice win for the Black Knights.
And you touched on it that you were at the Towson-Loyola game on Wednesday night. Towson gets a nice 11-8 victory over the Greyhounds.
The Tigers did a really nice job defensively on a night where Loyola and Bailey Savio really controlled the faceoffs, controlled the possession. Towson did a nice job of limiting Aiden Olmstead and Kevin Lindley on Loyola's offensive end. They frustrated the Greyhounds and then, you know, were very opportune offensively. So a really nice rebound win for a Towson team that lost to Richmond in overtime this past weekend and gave up a 9-1 lead in that game to the Spiders. So it was nice for Towson to bounce back, and Loyola is a team that still looking for their first win of the season. 0-4, played a very, very spirited game against Rutgers this past weekend, losing by a goal, and then have the setback to Towson on Wednesday night. So Loyola will look to get their first W of the season this weekend.
All right, Dix, we got a lot of games to preview and a great interview with Kevin Ward coming up. So let's get right into the game previews. 6 top 20 games on Saturday, and we'll start with number 6 Ohio State. They're 4-0. They'll travel to Ithaca to take on the number 11 ranked Cornell Big Red, who are 3-0. That game is at noon, and fans can catch it on ESPN+.
Big game, and a lot of times, all the time, we talk about teams replicating or building on successes. Ohio State really opened up a lot of eyes with that 20-8 victory on the road at North Carolina. And they had to go on the road again in Naples, Florida. Compliments to Tom Rotans, who put together the Florida event last weekend where Ohio State played Harvard. And the Buckeyes, what was it, 17-12, I want to say, was the final over the Crimson. But it was a good game. I watched the first first quarter and a half of it. And it was a good game. Jack Myers is, you know, and this is no disrespect to Jack. When I went in preparation for this season, I went and, you know, looked at the All Big Ten performers from last year. He was a first team All Big Ten performer. And I just didn't remember him having that kind of year last year, but he had a very productive year. And this year he is just off the charts with his production. With his leadership, he's doing it scoring goals, the quarterback of that offense. He is legit. Like if the season were to end today, I think he'd be in serious consideration to be a Tuerton finalist. And I know, look, we're only 4 weeks in or whatever, but that's how well he's playing. And they'll take on a Cornell team that got a midweek victory over Hobart, which is a big win because the Statesmen were able to knock off Lehigh. Which again got them on some people's maps. So Big Ten versus Ivy League, these games are always fun. You know, you had Penn State knocked off Yale last week in that type of configuration. Maryland knocked off Princeton. You know, can Ohio State continue to carry that Big Ten banner in that game against Cornell this weekend?
In a battle of the winged helmets, number 16 Michigan, who's 6-0. Will host and take on their stiffest test yet when they host the Blue Hens, who are number 17, and come into the game at 4-1. That game is at noon, and you can catch that on Big Ten Network Plus.
Michigan, you want to talk about production. Mikey Bain, Josh Zawada, Ryan Cohen is a freshman who is just lighting it up. they just got tested big time midweek, 12-10 victory on the road against Marquette. Is Marquette in the upper echelon of lacrosse teams? Probably not right now, but, you know, playing in that indoor facility can be tricky. And I thought the Wolverines handled it very, very well. So this will be a test for Michigan, who I believe is 6-0, right? Did you just say they were 6-0? Yeah. Yes. And I know that, you know, they're in my top 20 toward the bottom of the top 20. But I can see there's a number of people that don't have them ranked just because they don't think that their body of work is as impressive as other teams. But you play what's in front of you, and Michigan has handled their business, and they'll face a Delaware team that the one blemish on the season is against Duke, which I thought the Blue Hens played very well. J.P. Ward is a guy who, you know, much like Jack Myers, but Myers was more of a known quantity. You know, J.P. Ward is just filling up the back of the net. Terrific offensive player. So this will be an interesting game for sure. Can Michigan, you know, can Go Blue keep the momentum going?
Number nine, North Carolina is 4-1, and they continue their 7-game homestand to start the season when they host the number 19 ranked Denver Pioneers, who are 3-2. That game is at noon, and fans can catch that on the ACC Network Extra.
Yeah, and you know, what? How can you blame the Tar Heels? Who wouldn't want to start their season 7 straight games in what many people call God's country down in North Carolina? You know, being a future Tar Heel dad, I can now appreciate
appreciate
the sentiment. If God wasn't a Tar Heel fan, why did he make the sky Carolina blue? But this is a North Carolina team that 2 solid wins after the loss to Ohio State, beat a very tough Brown team last week, midweek, and then turned a close game against Johns Hopkins into a rout, really. So Carolina seems to be finding their legs. Obviously, Chris Gray, we mentioned Jack Myers being a Tuareton finalist. I think there's no doubt that Chris Gray would be in D.C. if the season were to end today. I like their goaltending. And Colin Krieg has given them some good saves. And, you know, it's been a defense that's been banged up and a little bit of a rotation, but you got to give credit to Blake Gable. He's a sophomore out of Baltimore who earned some minutes last season late, became an option at Logstick Midi, and he's been able to bump down to play some close defense for Joe Gresci, and he's done a nice job there. Denver lost to Jacksonville this past weekend, and kudos to you for throwing out the podcast bulletin, Ted Moon. All the coaches that have been on our podcast are 3-0, Gary Gate, Andy Shea, and now John Galloway from Jacksonville. Great interview, by the way, with Coach Galloway last week. But, you know, the good news is Denver lost that game. Jack Hanna found a shooting stroke, and then they rebounded with a win later in the weekend over Canisius, right?
Canisius,
if I'm not mistaken. So another trip back east for Denver. They're no stranger to frequent flyers after being in Durham a couple weeks ago. They'll come back east and go down the Tobacco Road to take on Carolina in a key contest.
Next game up is the number 3 Georgetown Hoyas will host the number 18 Princeton Tigers. Before we get to that discussion, let's bring in our guest this week, Kevin Warren, head coach. This week, our guest is Georgetown head coach Kevin Warren, whose Hoyas are off to a fantastic start and host the Princeton Tigers this weekend. Coach Warren, welcome back to the D-Flying Dixie podcast. You're one of our favorite guests.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know who's in charge of that voting, but I will vote in favor of myself as well. So I love spending time with you guys.
Coach, it's great to see you. Obviously, much different than when we talked the last time. I think we had you on April of last year, really trying to get through a season versus attacking a season, thriving in a season. How would you compare last year to 2022 thus far?
Night and day, you know. I think you guys know you've been around lacrosse a while. I think the biggest thing for us was an opportunity in the fall just to scale everything back. And for us, we weren't around last fall we came in last spring to back to school. So allowing our current sophomores to have a fall to develop, allowing our, you know, current freshmen to have a typical college experience, and allowing our college, allowing our current juniors to have that fall developmental period as juniors, because they missed it last year, been really beneficial. I think we do things, we take it really, really slow in the fall. We really, really want to build the foundation, fundamentals, you know, scrimmaging at night, and then being able to just layer our concepts and things we need to cover throughout the year. But I think we're able to do it at a slower pace, and it's just great, because at the end of the day, that fall, the fall is so important for just developing your guys, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's a skill, and then for our team schematically and whatnot. So it's been a lot of fun spending more time with the guys face to face, you know, getting to know them a lot more. A lot of our program is built on relationships, so getting to be around the guys is probably the most important thing that we missed from the 21 season now till this fall and in the spring.
Love following you on Instagram, and you know, one of the more, you don't post a lot, but when you do, it's funny, and I've been taken by your pregame footwear or what you're going to wear to a game. How did that come about? And do you really take the input of people voting on what shoes you should wear for a game?
Yeah, it's really intricate process. I mean, it's unbelievable. Coach Rowlett, I guess this is why you hang around young guys, to be young again. Maybe it's just a time in my life where I want to be cool again. And I have 22 pairs of Jordans in my basement. And my wife, you know, finally looked down there and said, what are you doing with these things? You're 44 years old. So Coach Rowe and I decided, and this was after we got approval from Coach Schreiber, who is our, you know, gear guy. And we said this year for our guys, when we wear business suits and whatnot, shirt and tie and suits on the road, if you have an unbelievable pair of sneakers that are crisp, out of the box clean, you can wear them with your suit. So not only are we, you know, I'm getting back and then we're like kind of cool now. Now I get to wear my Jordans. So, you know, every week my daughter, the last three games, my daughter comes downstairs. She sees what suit we have. I'm going to wear. My son and daughter go down, but the Campbell, my daughter, has more of a say, and she'll go, nope, don't like that. Yes, I like that. What's Coach Rowe wearing? So I have to text Coach Rowe, or she'll call Coach Rowe and say, send me a picture of what you're wearing, so we don't wear the same shoes. And you know, that's how it's been. She looks, they look forward to it, but she says I have a nice variety of shoes, which when you get an approval of a 9-year-old, I feel very good about that day and all the positive things that could happen. So that's how it is. And it's been fun. My feet hurt, I'll be honest with you, because I'm not sure, you know, wearing brand new shoes and then walking around with them, Jordans are kind of, you know, they're very snug, you know, around my feet. You know, it's been fun. And I think right now we didn't do it week one. So Coach Rowlett put up a, you know, one of those surveys and whatnot on Instagram. So I won last week. He won yesterday. So we gotta get this going. And it's kind of fun.
I love this. I like the fact that we're trying to class up our sideline gear and pregame gear. I've been very disappointed in college basketball coaches who have just gone so far away from the coat and tie on the sideline to just wearing whatever comfortable quarter zipped and sneakers that they like. I've been really impressed. I think Gary Gate is a great addition to the men's coaching, where he wears like his hockey coach suit on the sideline. So I'm happy to hear this, Kevin, that you guys are, you know, styling and raising the bar for coaches everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we enjoy the heck out of it, I'll tell you that much. And my wife is finally excited that I'm actually wearing no shoes instead of them collecting the dust. But I said, but don't forget, you know, there's a chance they could get, you know, resold and given away, and you know, give them to my son, Patrick. I mean, we just keep it in the family. It's really important, you know.
You have 22 pairs of Jordans, Kevin. D-Fly has about a dozen pairs of the old Reebok pumps. You remember the Reebok pumps?
Fantastic. Yes, absolutely. You know, pump it up, and you know, you had to squeeze the tongue with the basketball, and you know, it made it snug. So that's good.
What was the guy's name?
D. Brown.
Pumped up and then won the dunk contest.
Yeah, right.
That was legendary. That was legendary. That sold a million of those shoes. A million pairs of those. Coach, you got an experienced team, number of grad students and seniors and juniors, and they have earned a lot of preseason accolades, and they're certainly delivering on it, their performance so far in the season. How do you get those guys, an experienced team, how do you blend those guys with transfers and freshmen and create a good culture around your program?
Yeah, listen, it's. I wish there was a book on it. I think every year, every team is different. It really is. But I think you got to rely on your guys to do a lot of the work outside of practice, quite honestly. You know, NCAA rules say I can only be with our guys about 20 hours a week. So there's a lot of time when those guys are spending, you know, time with each other, whether it's in the locker room, training room, out in the field on their own, during practice, off the field, traveling, all that stuff. And I think the one thing that our guys have learned, you know, you learn through your experiences, you know, and we had some really good experiences last year and not so good experiences. We've had a few good experiences so far, and maybe during the week, during practice, we haven't. And I think you just got to keep learning from those experiences. But I think at the end of the day, the thing that we do, we kind of set some expectations of this is who we are, this is what we're about. And those guys have to be willing to understand, the new guys have to be willing to understand this is what this program is about. And our old guys have to be able to self-police. And I think that's a huge word for us, that our guys can find the difference between being a teammate and a friend. They can find the difference of, hey, we're inside the lines, meaning the field, and we're outside the lines when we're off the field. And I think when guys who can get after each other, hold each other accountable, have a standard, and talk to their best friend and say, you're not doing enough, they're comfortable doing that. I think that separates a lot of okay teams to good teams to great teams to elite teams. And I think you have a lot of those guys, and the strength in numbers, so to speak, where a lot of guys have done a lot of good things, they go back to those experiences, because you're not guaranteed what you did in the past. You're not guaranteed that the next day, but you got to realize and recognize, how do we get there? And that's what you have to actually do over and over. And sometimes it's not perfect, but I think at the end of the day, with us and our emphasis on relationships, when you get to know your teammate, you understand who they are. Every guy, it's a different button. Some guys got to get yelled at. Some guys got to get pulled aside. Some guys you just got to talk to, want to walk to practice or the locker room. But I think the consistent message, because what we've seen in the past is, hey, this is how we've done things. We've had some okay success, but I think let's build on those. But let's kind of change a little bit to make sure it fits everybody's personality and how they react to things.
Coach, enter this season, Georgetown is a team, and Dan and I have talked about it a lot on this podcast. When you think about the Big East, it seems like you always go to Denver, for a variety of reasons, but Georgetown has won the last three Big East championships. This year, you come in preseason ranked 4. You're up to 3 in the rankings. How do you I don't know if this is the right word, but how do you shift the mindset from being the hunter to the hunted and convey that to your players?
I think it's actually really easy to say, and the guy has got to be able to do it. We're not perfect. And I think for us, we're always searching for that perfect game. It's still out there. But I think there's two trains of thought where you say, okay, you have a goal, whatever it may be, that's great, that's down the road, but if you keep staring at that goal, you're going to trip over your feet with what's in front of you. So you got to take care of that business, knowing what's going to drive you is down the road. So it's that the pull push of, okay, we got to push and take care of what's here, but whatever we do should pull us towards our goal. But I think you got to keep it simple too. I think, at the end of the day, we have a mantra of 1-0 in everything we do, just take care of business, whether it's one rep in the weight room, in practice, games, possessions, it doesn't matter, because what you did in the past doesn't guarantee you anything. We don't walk on the field because we're, ranked this or ranked that, and we don't get that number of goals on the scoreboard to start a game. It's 0-0. You get 2 hours, 60 minutes to go against somebody else. And, you figure it out, you learn from your experiences, and you move on, good or bad.
So one of the things that you guys have really adjusted is your schedule. Pretty ambitious schedule. You guys are currently sitting at 4-0, off to a great start with a lot of a really tough out-of-conference games coming up before you get into your conference play. What was the thought process behind, you know, kind of shifting a schedule from certain opponents to the opponents that you have in the 2022 docket?
Yeah, no, good question. You know, I think at the end of the day, the kids want to play the best teams out there that you can. And we all know the scheduling piece is one of the most underrated, or the hardest thing to do as a head coach is to get a schedule together with everybody's conference dates and agreements to play home and aways. And so you have to be kind of creative to do that. But I think you want to play the best schedule possible. I also think that, and as I mentioned before, you know, our guys learn from experiences, but I learned from experiences. You know, obviously we were fortunate enough to, you know, get to the quarterfinals last year. And I felt like in that game, not that we were shell-shocked, I just wish we had more experience with a really, really athletic team, with, you know, playing three weeks in a row really hard, whether it's the Big East tournament it was, then their first round game versus Syracuse, and then playing Virginia in the quarterfinals. I was like, okay, if this is a goal for us, we gotta replicate this during the season. We can't just say, hey, let's just go play, and at the end of the year, kind of hope you gotta get some bumps and bruises. You gotta get your butt kicked every once in a while, you know, and you gotta grow from those experiences. So I thought this was the best way to do that. And I think the kids have responded really well. They're very excited, you know, so we're looking forward to obviously playing a really, really good Princeton team this Saturday. But again, from what we've done in the past, you know, that doesn't mean we automatically win on Saturday. That has nothing to do with it. But I think we can learn and grab experiences from those games to help us, which is the most important thing.
Speaking of your upcoming game, a lot was made a few weeks ago when you were playing Penn about you had played a game, they hadn't. There was some Twitter debate about the advantage of having game film on someone versus having played a game. Well, you're playing Princeton. You have three games of film that you've seen them play. What have you seen about the Tigers on film, and how are you preparing for the sweeps game?
Yeah, for us, it's different because it's a shorter week. You know, I don't believe they're playing midweek, so they'll have a full week to prepare for us. So, you know, you got to find a balance. It's still early. You know, so you can take you can look at what they've done versus their game versus Monmouth and Binghamton and Maryland from this past weekend, and they'll do the same to us. But I think, you know, you gotta, as a coach, you gotta find the balance of, we're still, you know, beginning of March. So it's still, the season is still young. You're still trying to figure out some things, what you do well, what you need to work on. They do the same, but I think, you know, you watch a team like them, really, really athletic across the board. They play really, really hard. Their defense is really solid. Their goalies had a great season so far. I know it seems like they had some things go on with the faceoff in the past couple of weeks with some guys out. They didn't have their main guys in. We fully expect those guys to come back for our game. And then, you know, Jim Mitchell does an unbelievable job in the offensive end for them. I think he's a great coach of what they do and get their guys into certain spots. They got a lot of speed at the midfield, and they're not afraid to sling it. So we got to be on high alert on Saturday. But I think, again, a really good team. They play in a really good league. And what I've seen on film is that, you know, they're absolutely capable of beating anybody in the country. So we have to make sure we're ready. We have to take care of things that we need to clean up, you know, and we got to prepare for them and flip it around and play for 60 minutes on Saturday.
With respect to their offense or any team's offense that you're going to face in 2022, you're a defensive guy. And you have got a pretty good defense back there. Will Bowen, Gibson Smith, James Donaldson. What is it like to coach those guys? And what is your philosophy with a guy like a Will Bowen coming in? Gibson Smith's been your number one for a couple of years. And now Will Bowen is the capable of being a number one. So really you've got two ones on the defense. How's that worked out?
Well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it actually starts with the other guy in the goal. You know, when you have that backbone of Owen McElroy, who I think is the best goalie in the country. You know, I just believe when you have a guy that, when the guys play in front of a guy that they know that, hey, if I mess up, this guy behind me's got my back. I just think that allows you to play, you know, a little more free. a little more, not as hesitant, go out and not be crazy out of control, but just be, do what we need to do to be successful. You can do it with a higher sense of urgency and whatnot. But I think for us, one of the things that we did as a defense when we met in the beginning of the year was, listen, this has got to be, you got to get rid of your ego here. Like, if you think you're really good, that's great. But guess what? For us to be successful, we all have to gel and make sure we all have to take care of each other, because there will be games and we will play opponents that will stress us, you know, and we don't need everybody to say, I want to be the hero on defense. We need to make sure that we stick to our tenets and what we do defensively, you know, to make sure we have success on every possession. And that's how we kind of break it. And I told the guys, I said, listen, there might be games where, you know, we ask you to play a different position. We may ask you to play a different matchup, but it's not because we don't like it. It's because it's the best thing for Georgetown lacrosse to, you know, in the plan to hopefully help us win a game. So it's been fun. Those guys have done a really, really good job of just saying, okay, I'm good with that. And they've meshed really, really well.
Switching gears a bit to get to something that's really important. When we last spoke to you, Dixie said it was last April. It was right before the NFL draft. And you predicted accurately that the Jets would take Zach Wilson at quarterback, and they did. How would you evaluate his rookie season under center for the Jets? And what did the Jets need to do in the offseason to improve and get to the playoffs?
How long do we have? This could go for a while.
Well, Dixie's account, you got about 26 minutes.
Yeah. On the free account, we're in trouble.
15
here,
so minutes.
I got to keep it short, like the joy of the Jets season. So this should be easy. You know, I think he has intangibles. I think he needs weapons. I think you've seen in the NFL, you need an offensive line and you need some playmakers. I think the added, if you look, every rule in the NFL is geared towards the offense. So why have, you know, the Bengals just went to the Super Bowl with a quote unquote average, okay line, but a great quarterback and great weapons. So they have to upgrade on the outside. I think they have some guys. Michael Carter is going to be one heck of a running back, I think. But they got to protect Zach Wilson too. And I know Joe Douglas, the GM, that's what he believes in. Ex-Philadelphia Eagle front office guy and ex-Baltimore Ravens guy. So he knows what's important. And then I think defensively, with the way that the Jets play, they kind of put their corners on an island a little bit. We need more pressure up front. I'd love to see another linebacker. I know I'm a huge Alabama football fan, but a kid like N'Kobe Dean from Georgia, who's all over the field, like, it's like one of those guys. And I'd like to have somebody in the back end. I know they've looked at, you know, all of the mock drafts that I'm sure Mark Dixon does, you know, when he's bored and all that stuff. You know, they're talking about Kyle Hamilton and something like that. And I think you got to be really good up the middle, where if you can have a really, really good interior defensive lineman, a really good linebacker that can do multiple things, and then have a shutdown corner and a safety. You kind of go up the middle there and you give yourself a chance. So I also like to see them, you know, just fix the offensive line. We just need guys healthy. We're all over the place. It was a subway turnstile at times, moving guys back and forth. So they need to decide and develop some guys, but year two in the system, I'm excited about it. I know the schedule's really hard, but, you know, we'll see.
Last question for you, Coach, and you turned a lot of people on to Vincent's Clam Bar last year with your restaurant recommendations. We've changed it up for this season. We're asking coaches, what is on your playlist music-wise, or if you're a television person, you know, a Netflix or an Apple TV or whatever, what are you watching these days? So your choice.
You know, again, we had the conversation about the Jordans. I think I'm really cool music wise, but I will always go back to a little Pearl Jam. You know, that's who I grew up with. My, you know, my first CD was 10 way back when. And Coach Phipps' wife, Maggie, talked to me about a group called Iration. They're from Hawaii, and it's a kind of a reggae type band, and it's fantastic. So I listened to that as well. And my wife and I went to Meriwether and watched Dave Matthews live in August, and got back into him. And, you know, I started thinking about, you know, Hofstra days when listening to him before, you know, a game or hanging out after a game. So I'm a music guy. The office with Coach Robert, Coach Phipps, and Coach Rallet, they are huge Netflix guys. Every time I bring a Netflix show, I've watched the last series I watched was Bad Blood, and I have asked them to watch it, and they refuse to watch it because they don't think I'm very good at recommending shows. So they keep jumping around to something else. And I'm like, can somebody please just watch it, please? So I don't have to say this like for the last like 5 months. So I think Coach Phipps, I think I got him to maybe start that. So I feel good about my influence on the staff.
Kevin, last week I was, Dixie couldn't make it, so I was hosting with Matt Kinnear, and we, our give and go was about grungier rock bands and who were in our top five. So I'll give you my top five. It was Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, and Stone Temple Pilots.
Jeez. I mean, you're literally, that's
who's in your top five?
Everybody.
Aren't there only five? I mean, really, to choose from?
There are dozens, Dixie.
There are dozens. I'm not a huge Alice in Chains fan, and that's all right. But I mean, it's Pearl Jam, Nirvana. You feel like they're the, and Soundgarden are the ones when you think about it. You know, you go to that top three, and you know, listening to Chris Cornell or you know Kurt Cobain, you know, I made sure I was listening to Nevermind. You know, this morning as I was waiting with my kids to drop them over the bus. So and they're like, Dad, what's that? I'm like, you don't understand. You know, and then Campbell says, my daughter says, oh, that's the old guy music. I said, all right, that's how it works. So I felt like I was going to cry, but I'll get over it.
When I'm listening to the radio and they, you know, the classic rock station is playing Motley Crue, I that's when I feel old. Like, yeah, really?
Little this is classic rock? You make a right turn and you see a straightaway, a little kickstart your heart. And Mark Dixon, you know, there's a very good chance that speed camera will be working.
Watch out.
You'll be watching.
The light bulbs are flashing, but it's not the paparazzi.
It's not the paparazzi going, listen to what I'm doing. That's you getting you helping the county get a road paved because you got to pay for it.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. You're welcome anytime. Good luck this weekend against Princeton, and we hope to talk to you later this season.
Sounds great. Appreciate it, guys.
Always fun to talk to Coach Warren here about his Georgetown Hoyer program, Tix.
Really is. I mean, one of the best personalities in the game, a coach that really, his outlook is just terrific. You know, it really is. He endured some very difficult times in his early years on the Hilltop, and to see him and his staff and his program have this level of success is really, really cool.
Yeah, it seems like he keeps things in perspective, doesn't try to take himself too seriously, and realizes that, you know, second to winning, having fun and enjoying that experience is the most important thing for his players. I've watched Princeton play a few times this season, and they kind of remind me of the Georgetown Hoyas in terms of their personnel, their units,
also,
how they match up. I think they have really good goalie play.
Uh-huh.
Eric Peters has been really good at the start of the season, and he was great against Maryland. I think he had 19 saves and really kept them in the game at times. They have George Bond and some other good defenders on the back end. Their short stick defensive midfielders are impressive. Sam English, I think, is a tremendous player, all-American caliber type of athlete playing midfield. He had four goals. Four of the first five goals Princeton scored against Maryland, Sam English had. And he is
– Wow.
Maryland switched to cover him with a long pole, and he was still beating that guy. So I think they have, and their offense is strong. I mean, they get a contribution. They don't have a Winauskas or, you know, but they get contributions from a lot of different guys on the offensive end. It's sort of like there's a lot of similarities there. And I'm really excited to see how this game plays out on Saturday.
I am too. When you look at George, let's go back to Georgetown, the big win over Notre Dame this past weekend that wasn't as competitive as some people thought it was going to be. And that's no easy task to go into South Bend and take on an Irish team that's incredibly talented to do that to them on Arlotta. And then they just, they blitzed Mount St. Mary's in the middle of the week. This is a Mount St. Mary's team that was competitive with Delaware, beat Navy. They just had their, I mean, at one point, I think it was 14-0 Georgetown in the second quarter. So this team is for real. Not that, you know, ranked third in the country, not any surprise, but like we talked about with Kevin Warren, a lot of people were like, really, Georgetown, top five preseason? Huh? And they've proven, they've lived up to that billing. And this is a you know, you know, Princeton, we've talked about it repeatedly. This is the post Michael Sowers era, but I like how they share the ball. I like their athleticism, and this could be a tough matchup for the Tigers. I guess maybe, you know, they didn't face off particularly well against Maryland last weekend, and you don't want to be playing a ton of defense against the Hoyas. You do want to be able to try to get to a groove against this very, very good back line of Georgetown. So I think faceoffs will be critical in this game for Princeton.
Princeton was missing their two top faceoff guys were out, and I expect one of them to be back. Sandoval should be back this weekend, and that could make a difference for them. How about the improvement in the schedule for the Hoyas? They're taking on anybody who will play them, and you mentioned that with Kevin, but it's a big difference in their out non-conference schedule than in years past.
And I think the thing that sometimes we don't realize is how difficult scheduling can be, especially when you've had traditional or regular opponents try, you know, a lot of times that comes with a, you know, 4 or 5 year, 6 year commitment. So, you know, trying to rework that schedule, but, you know, Coach Warren told us, this is what you want to be able to say to recruits. Here's who you're playing, you know, week in and week out. And of course you have your conference schedule. So that was a knock on Georgetown for many, many years, but you can't say that about them anymore.
1 o'clock game, number 2, Virginia, 4-0, will host the number 15, Johns Hopkins Blue Jays, 3-2 on the season. The game's at 1, as I mentioned, and will be available on ACC Network Extra.
Wow. I mean, talk about a stretch for Johns Hopkins. You go what? Loyola, well, Georgetown, Loyola, Carolina, Virginia. Then you've got the return of Dave Petromalo to Homewood Field next weekend. And not the Syracuse, you know, we talked about not the Syracuse, the Syracuse Bowl, but that game is going to have a lot of emotion. And I expect a big crowd. So this is a gauntlet for the Blue Jays. And I'm not so sure how they match up with Virginia this year. You know, Virginia is a different kind of animal. Maryland and Virginia have proven to be a step ahead of the rest of the country at this point in the season. First time that these two teams have played each other, because they were, I think the series was interrupted in 20, right? Like they weren't supposed to play each other in 2020.
I don't believe they played because of when COVID hit, and they certainly didn't play last year. So this
well, I don't think first... I don't think Virginia was on the schedule of Hopkins in 2020. Obviously, last year with the Big Ten playing conference only, Johns Hopkins had to stick to that. So it's been a minute since these two teams have tangled. And it'll be fun to see them again getting after each other for the Doyle-Smith Cup.
I think Hopkins will have a chance in this. They're going to have to win faceoffs, and they're going to have to get a great game from Josh Kirsten in goal.
He was a difference maker against Loyola.
He's capable of it.
He is. Yeah, he is. But, you know, again, you know, Virginia has so many weapons. So many weapons.
And our final game of the weekend, Dix, Saturday, 2 o'clock, ACC Network Extra. Number 7, Notre Dame, hosts the number 1 Terps, coming to the game 4-0 in the South Bend.
Replay of that great quarterfinal game from a year ago in South Bend where Maryland won that in overtime. This will be a heck of a game. And if the weather, even if the weather is crummy, I think you get a good crowd at Arlotta for these old ACC rivals renewing it once again. I mean, look, you want to talk about competitive schedules. Both Maryland and Notre Dame don't duck anyone. You know, they play as tough of schedules as there are out there in the country. I mean, obviously, I think Loyola has a tougher schedule this year. But this will be a terrific lacrosse game between two teams that have a lot of, you know, these are two teams that have championship weekend hopes and have a legit chance to get there. So we'll see how this one plays out. I doubt this one will be 6-5 as it was for like 4 or 5 years straight.
What's your over under on goals scored?
22. I think this is going to be like a 12-10, 13-11 kind of thing.
You're right. That sounds about right. All right, Dix, it's time for our give and go. Last week, we talked about music. We're going to bring it back to something we all know and love, but also highly controversial, and that is ice cream. Ice cream flavors.
I thought you were going to say EDM.
country music, big time, like country pop music. Country music.
Yeah.
Let's talk about ice cream. So I want to get your rankings. We're talking flavors. And we're not allowed to talk about very specialized like Ben and Jerry type flavors or combination of things. Obviously, you know, if a vanilla ice cream, you know, a hot fudge sundae has peanuts and fudge and a banana split, like, but I don't want any of these really complex because that's too much in the weeds, unless you have a particular absolute favorite. But think of the traditional ice cream flavors. And I did some research. I looked up, you know, America's most popular, and it's pretty simple list. There's a couple of surprises on there that are a little, but I'll give you mine. And again, you know, I'm a man of simple tastes. Number three, chocolate. You can't go wrong with chocolate ice cream. Now there's different ways you can do it. I particularly, one of my favorites is chocolate fudge brownie, the Ben and Jerry's flavor, love that. Number two, vanilla. It's just simple. You can get like the French vanilla, you can get vanilla bean. There's different ways you can mix that, but it's sort of like the, I'm trying to think of the analogy. It goes well with everything. It's like if you have like a black suit, you know, it's good. You can mix and match all different kinds of things with it, and it's always good and it's never wrong. But number one, my favorite ice cream, I can pick anytime, cookies and cream. I love cookies and cream ice cream, and it's just so good. It's the recipe of an Oreo cookie type of thing crunched up into vanilla ice cream. And it's just delicious. Every bowl of it, every cone of it, every scoop of it is just perfect.
Okay. So, I mean, you go from one boring topic to this boring topic. I mean, so I'm not a huge ice cream guy, but I like ice cream.
I find that hard to believe.
How dare you? How dare you? But
and
I mean,
this is universal. Everyone can right. discuss this.
Of course. So being in Baltimore, how can you not talk Charmery, you know, the Charmery or the Harker Brothers? Like those ice creams are, my wife got some Harker Brothers last weekend, roasted strawberry, which is non-dairy. It's just like really good. And then Thin Mint. So basically what's that called? Mint chocolate chip. It's just like their twist on it. But okay, I can do this. What about like friendly, like Butter Crunch? Is that too specialized?
I'll give you butter pecan.
But not butter crunch.
Okay, I'll give you butter, whatever. I just feel like this is the, if you go to the store brand and they have 20 different flavors of ice cream, which ones are your favorites?
Okay, so that's hard for me because I like to think outside the box a little bit when I get, I don't drink, like I said, I don't eat ice cream that much, but when I do, I want to make it count. So Friendly's Butter Crunch is my favorite ice cream of all time. And that was from when I was a kid. My parents would go to the Security Mall off of Security Boulevard, Friendly, and I would get a cone of the Butter Crunch with the chocolate sprinkles. Like that was Nirvana. That was the best. I'm going to mess this up. So if we're like not going super basic, I love anything with Reese's in it. So, you know, like a Reese's peanut butter cup ice cream or a Twix. Sure.
Those are delicious. Yeah.
Yeah. They're really good. But if we're going basic, I mean, you're talking like Neapolitan territory here. Like
if you look at America's top ice creams, it's like vanilla, strawberry.
Yeah, of course. So if I had to go, how about this? The sherbet count? Because I love sherbet.
It's not ice cream, but sure. You can put that in there. That's old school.
All right. School.
Talk about boring. You can go out with sherbet.
Sherbet's got great flavor. You got the lime, pineapple, raspberry, orange. Okay. I mean, don't even tell sherbet. Me you haven't enjoyed a push-up from the Good Humor truck over the years.
Well, that's not sherbet. That's like a orangey flavored.
Right, but it's close to sherbet or sherbet, whatever it is.
Creamsicle. Those things.
Yeah. Delicious. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I would go. I mean, yeah, chocolate. Okay. Everybody loves chocolate. What else would I do? See, I'm not a big cookies and cream guy. I don't like mint chocolate chip. I'm not a huge butter pecan fan.
In my house, I'll just throw this out there. mint chocolate chip and chocolate chip cookie dough. Mm-hmm. That's what my wife and kids eat. Those are like their two favorites. They'll eat cookies and cream too, but those are the three. Like I'm told routinely, make sure that chocolate chip cookie dough ice cream is in our freezer.
Matt and Erica love the mint chocolate chip. This is not. I mean, okay. Let me cut right to my favorite French vanilla. If it's just like plain, whatever French vanilla is it, and I like it better than vanilla just because it has a little bit extra something in it, whether it's flavor or texture or whatever, it's French vanilla. Okay.
Okay. So that we're kind of on the same page. You said chocolate and vanilla. You don't like cookies and cream, but you said this butter crunch.
Butter crunch. Friendly's butter crunch.
Really, so we're kind of, our top threes aren't that different. How do you go for like a cherry vanilla?
Not a big Rocky Road. No, not a big Rocky
Moose Road. Tracks. See, I like that when you can get one of those combination type of ice creams, like that has peanut butter cups in it or chocolate something or another in it.
Yeah.
Pretzels or all that stuff's good, but it's always the vanilla base that sort of is the
if you're going like Taharka Brothers, Honey Graham is incredible. Key lime pie, incredible. And if you're going Ben and Jerry's, Chunky Monkey and Chubby Hubby are my two favorites.
Yeah, Chubby Hubby is my wife's all-time favorite. I'm told so many times, can you pick up some Chubby Hubby for me? Okay.
I don't know if my wife ever asked me. I don't know if she's talking about me or the ice cream.
I know that my wife is definitely, she cares more about the ice cream than me. So I know exactly what she's talking about when she asks me. All right, that sounds like a good place to stop. We'd like to thank our guests this week. Georgetown head coach Kevin Warren. Best of luck to him and his team this weekend and throughout the rest of the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app, leave a review, tell a friend, and share this podcast with them. It's free, it's not hard to do, and we would sincerely appreciate that. If you're interested in advertising on this pod or others at Inside Lacrosse, let us know. It's very affordable, and we reach a great
demographic audience.
All of the above each week with the podcast. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse and I'm simply at D_FLY at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative. And as always, enjoy the games.